Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast. And this week, after an incredible response to our discussion about PlayStation's decision to stop producing physical games, we've been inspired to take another trip into the Gadget Show archives.
Yeah, we've dusted off some of our favourite gaming moments from over the years, revisiting iconic console launches, unforgettable game releases that remind us why we fell in love with gaming in the first place. It's a timely reminder of what's at stake as the industry moves increasingly towards an all-digital future.
But before we get into the podcast, a quick word from our friends at CEX.
Here's a challenge for you. Think of one piece of tech you've got at home that you haven't used in the last year.
Yeah, now imagine swapping it for something that you'll actually use probably every day.
I've got some tech that I haven't used in 40 years, but I get the logic. Because, of course, that's exactly what CEX is all about. They buy thousands of different gadgets from phones and tablets to cameras, consoles and laptops.
And because they sell professionally tested pre-owned tech, you can often upgrade for a lot less than buying brand new.
And, of course, everything comes with a 5-year warranty.
Head to webuy.com and see what your forgotten gadgets could become.
Susie, first of all, brilliant to have you back. We missed you last week.
Oh, thank you. Good to be back.
While you've been away, something rather unexpected has happened. Ever since we talked about Sony's decision to stop producing physical PlayStation games from 2028, well, to say that our social media has been on fire is an understatement. Honestly, we haven't had this much engagement around a single story since we launched the Gadget Show podcast, to be honest with you. Hundreds and hundreds of comments, emails, messages from people who feel really strongly that physical games still have a place. It turns out that we're not alone, Susie. So if you agree and you'd like to support the campaign to encourage Sony to maybe just rethink its position or maybe one of their competitors off the back of the same thing, there's already a petition with hundreds of thousands of signatures behind it. And you'll find a link to it in the description for this episode. Now, all of this got me thinking, what is it that we actually love about physical gaming? Of course, it's the ownership. It's, you know, dusting off a cassette. I tell you what, it's going into a cartridge, isn't it, before you whack it in your Atari or whatever. But anyway, it's about ownership. You know, it's about ownership. It's about having a stake in you know, the creative process of that game, isn't it? It's about the joy of collecting.
Yeah.
Walking into somewhere like CEX and coming out with something maybe you didn't expect and are excited about, you know, under your arm. It's also about the memories, and the Gadget Show has been lucky enough to be there for so many of gaming's biggest moments over the last two decades. You can probably tell where we're going with this. We thought we'd celebrate physical gaming by taking a trip through the archives and revisiting some of our favourite gaming features from the TV show. And Susie, I couldn't think of a better place to start than one of my absolute favourites, which you fronted. You took us on a whistle-stop tour through the incredible history of Atari, one of the companies that helped create the games industry as we know it today. Let's have a look.
We want to pay tribute to the pioneers of computer gaming, a company that cost just $500 to set up, but was soon grossing $2 billion a year. They were the first people to really show how technology could be used as entertainment. I'm talking, of course, about Atari.
Started in 1972 by a couple of American computer programmers, Atari made Pong, the first commercially successful computer game. Its secret was its simplicity. The home version was a little brown console you plugged into your TV, but it only played Pong, and pretty soon, people started to want more games. Atari spent the next 5 years and $100 million getting their second computer console ready.
The 2600, the godfather of modern consoles and the best-selling game system of all time. And the key was this slot here. It meant that you weren't just limited to playing Pong anymore. Now, you could load other games.
The 2600 was hugely advanced, real cutting-edge stuff for 1979. But a console is only as good as the games you play on it. And to be a real success, what the 2600 needed was a killer application, a game so good and so addictive that everybody wanted to play it, and for the Atari 2600, the killer application was Space Invaders.
Well, apart from the scarf that was one of the stars of that feature, Susie, I absolutely loved it. I love the fact as well that you were using the Vader, the black variant of the Atari, which is very elusive. I have two, actually, Atari 2600s with the fake wood, the faux wood on the front. But I've always wanted what they call the Vader, which is the black one. So beautiful.
Yeah. Do you know what? Watching that. First of all, I don't know why they had to film those close-ups so close. I definitely wouldn't allow them to do that.
Oh, we appreciate it. I appreciate it.
But I had an Atari, and I was just thinking when I was watching that how many hours I spent playing Pong, first of all, then Space Invaders and following games. And actually, that story sort of stands up still, doesn't it?
River
Looking
Raid.
Back now, it's really easy to forget how revolutionary Atari was, because before that, computers were so serious, weren't they? It was all about work. And really, Atari was one of the first companies to say, actually, you know, tech can be fun.
The concept of interchangeable cartridges, the concept of being able to replicate, quite realistically, actually, many of the arcade experiences that we were having. I mean, imagine for those people listening that weren't around in the 80s and obviously the late 70s, but it was an 80s console by the time it got to the UK. Arcades were the cutting edge of technology. So relatively soon after during the heyday of the arcade, being able to have something of that experience sat on your carpet at home was absolutely extraordinary. And in such a uniquely futuristic science fiction piece of product design that even today is so evocative. It stands up, doesn't it? Like the iPod or something of real classic design acumen, it sits there, the Atari 2600, as something that, while very much of the period, is still really coveted and feels very beautiful and something that you'd want on the shelf. You know, it's that gorgeous to look at.
Yeah, it looks so cool, doesn't it? The interchangeable cartridges. Right. That's sort of the idea to shape the entire industry, you know, forever, really. And Space Invader, as I said in that piece, was the killer app. Sold consoles, got families playing together, and showed developers, you know, what gaming could actually become.
It's great. So, okay, more goodness to come. What's next? Okay, Susie, we're going to make one of our Patreon supporters day, month, maybe even year, because we're giving away £5,000 to spend at CEA.
That's right. After our previous winner, Richard Wykes, won big last series, we're giving another lucky supporter the chance to completely transform their tech collection.
So whether you're saving up for something special, planning the ultimate gaming setup, upgrading your entertainment, or replacing aging tech around the house, £5,000 at CEX gives you a lot of money to think about.
And thanks to our friends at T3, the winner will also receive a one-year subscription to the T3 magazine.
To be in with the chance of winning, simply become a Patreon supporter, and depending on your membership tier, you'll automatically receive one, three or five entries into our prize draw.
Every Patreon supporter also gets ad-free episodes, early access to new shows, exclusive bonus content, and access to our brilliant community of fellow gadget lovers.
And of course, if you join at the max tier, you'll also unlock the entire Gadget Show archive. That's nearly 20 years of gadget reviews, epic challenges, iconic moments, behind-the-scenes extras, and thousands of pieces of tech that have shaped the Gadget Show and our lives over the years. Head to patreon.com/thegadgetshow to join, and you'll find all the competition details along with the full terms and conditions in the episode description.
Yep, good luck. Well, by the end of 2005 and 1 year into the Gadget Show's TV run, because obviously we started in 2004, a next generation of gaming had officially arrived. Microsoft had just launched the Xbox 360, promising stunning HD graphics, online gaming on a scale that we'd never seen before, and enough power to leave the original Xbox in the weeds. Naturally, we got our hands on one, and Jason got his first experience with Microsoft's brand new console and its biggest launch titles. So, Jace, here's your first ever play on the Xbox 360. I remember this so well. All the way back from Christmas 2005.
Well, this is it. The moment of truth. For a gamer, this is what it's all about. Pressing the on button on a next generation console.
Thank you.
We're in. The raw power of this machine is staggering. It's got three dedicated core processors, making it 10 times faster than the previous Xbox. It's got a dedicated graphics card, which is a match for any PC gaming card. But most importantly, it's the first ever games console that's high definition. Because all of this doesn't really mean anything unless these are up to the task. The games. The games have got to be able to take advantage of this awesome machine if it's to be as successful as Microsoft promise. And as a big driving sim fan, Project Gotham is one of my favourite games. They say, out of all the titles at launch, this is the one that will show you the true Xbox 360's capabilities. Well, it's the moment of truth. Let's see if it lives up to its expectations. Look at those graphics. Staggering. Oh my God, look. If that's the game, we're in business. Oh. Oh. This is just glorious. Oh. People everywhere milling around, flashbulbs going off.
I remember that feeling of seeing people and paparazzi in the game, and that being a thing like that was making use of the accelerated hardware. And it's weird because I don't remember where I was. I don't know whether that was my actual front room or whether that was like a studio. I can't remember, but I remember that straight in the London map of Project Gotham Racing and having that reaction to seeing people. Maybe an advance on the people at the side of the road in like Sega Rally, you know, from the arcade and stuff. Absolutely amazing. What an amazing thing to be able to do. And
I mean, I'm obviously obsessed with your pyjamas.
Yeah.
I can't really get over those. They were your actual pyjamas, right?
I think so, yeah.
But sort of back to the games.
Yeah.
And also, you know, it makes me laugh how fresh we look. Because obviously it was 20 years ago, so we were in our early, mid-30s. Also, our delivery was different. The way that we presented everything was different. But I suppose, you know, back in those days, walking into a shop, picking up that Xbox 360 box, tearing off the seal, and just all that whole experience, it was everything, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, the kind of the competition between Sony and Microsoft and Nintendo, it was in its heyday. That was there was a lot of drama around it. There were loads of narratives and stories, and they were all trying to, you know, outdo each other at the launches. And so there was a lot of theatre. I remember going to, you know, Halo events and sitting in the Warthog and going over to the US. I think it was for the 360, actually, and the launch of Kinect. And you know, Microsoft would fly us over there. So there were a number of different reasons why the release of that console brings back a lot of memories and is incredibly exciting. But more significantly, though, for everyone listening and watching, the 360 was a real turning point and offered kind of PC gaming graphics, sophistication, flexibility in a box that sat in front of your telly. And that was, you know, I think absolutely amazing.
Yeah,
it's completely. Still one of my favourite consoles, and the design as well. It stands up.
It stands up now.
It's quite small and it's quite compact, isn't it? It stands up. It's not that far off the PlayStation 5 in terms of its kind of industrial design and the swagger that it's got on the sideboard. You know,
right? Remember back in 2006 when we surprised you in the studio with your very first look at Sony's brand new PlayStation 3.
Incredible.
Well, that's not. Yeah, I'm not going to show you that clip.
Yeah.
Because for me, actually, you know what's coming, but the real magic, and this really did cause a stir, it happened a few months later when the PlayStation 3 finally launched here in the UK. You went down to join the queue outside the shops, where hundreds of gamers had camped out overnight, all waiting to get their hands on Sony's first HD console. There was such an incredible buzz, wasn't there? Everybody was chatting, counting down the hours, sharing the excitement of being among the first to actually get their hands on this amazing piece of kit. It's something that we just don't really experience or see anymore. Nowadays, people just click reorder, wait for a courier, download the game at midnight. Boring. But back then, buying a new console was an actual life event. It was an experience. And I genuinely think that that's something modern gaming has lost. Now, stay with me on this. Take a look and let me know what you think.
Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show.
Reload!
This, of course, is the brand new Sony PS3 games console, the most powerful home games console ever. And you may remember seeing it in our last series when we had a Gadget Show exclusive and became the first people in Europe to get our hands on it.
Reload! I'm telling you now, this games machine is every bit as cool as its reputation. I mean, look at those graphics, photorealism, oh, headshot, and that Blu-ray player in that machine, of course, just waiting for me to pop in a nice high-definition movie.
And finally, after years of speculation and months of delays, they went on sale last Friday.
I'm here on Oxford Street. The time is 20 past eight. It's Thursday, the 22nd of March, and I'm here for the launch of Sony's PlayStation 3, which kicks off in about 3 hours, 40 minutes. Make that 3 hours, 39.
This Virgin Megastore on Oxford Street is the venue for the long-awaited launch. And eager punters have been here since yesterday.
Guys, anyone else for burgers?
As launches go, it seems to be a remarkably civilised affair.
This is not a problem. Actually, I don't quite know how I'm going to open it lying down.
At the US launch, there were riots at one store when punters realised there weren't enough PS3s to go round. Sure, these guys look a placid bunch, but you wouldn't like them when they're angry. And not having enough consoles to go around is sure to make a gamer angry.
A lesson that Sony seemed to have learnt from the other two. When the Nintendo Wii was first launched on Amazon, it sold out in just 7 minutes. And that might have something to do with the fact that there were only 100,000 units available on launch day. But even that is impressive compared to the amount of Xbox 360s you could buy, just 50,000 on day one. Critics will say that the availability of the PS3 is down to a lack of interest, whereas the fans will have you believe it's because Sony have got their act together.
I'd forgotten about that.
See, that looked like fun being a part of that.
Yeah, man. It's the theatre, the retail experience that maybe is lost now. Where there's, there are still buzzy events, aren't there? There are where all the I don't know, the TikTokers turn up or whatever. But being part of a queue and sleeping overnight in a sleeping bag, that was very much a feature of the gaming industry.
Yeah. The build-up to it, like, who you're going to go with, what snacks you were going to take, unless you were going to get given burgers. Hey, you know, you kept that one quiet. I noticed at the beginning of that piece, by the way, if you can remember back when we were in the studio and I'm talking and Jason's playing and he's ignoring me, we spent probably about 30% of filming with Jason ignoring me while he was playing games. That just took me right back to that moment again.
That is funny. It's true, though, because one of the greatest things about doing this show is that we got access to that technology and we got it earlier. We would get people, you know, coming with a security guard and they would have some prototype. And I can't remember whether that was the case with the PlayStation 3, but it would definitely have been early that I was in that room. So I'm like, yeah, give lip service to you, but while just trying to get some action, some console time. But yeah,
I don't think you even tried to give me any lip service. But anyway, nice one.
And of course, they totally outmaneuvered Microsoft, who went with the HD DVD format for the Xbox, which never landed. So yeah, even today, many people's main source of Blu-ray is the PlayStation 3. Mm. You know, because it's a very, very affordable way of playing discs that you can get from places like our sponsor CEX.
Do you think a lot? You're weaving it all in today.
Because they're physical, you can still get them. You see, you can trade them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the physicality. That's what we're loving, isn't it? Yeah. That's what everybody was loving in the backlash and stuff. Do you think a lot of the features that we saw there now we obviously simply take for granted, whereas back then they seemed unbelievably futuristic?
Well, why would we expect to not have physical discs, cartridges, etc., in the future when you've grown up with them? If it's all you know. I mean, of course we expected that to be the case, which is why we're doing this item, because it's off the back of, for gamers, a devastating development from Sony and also it looks like Microsoft.
Yeah.
You know, namely the ending of physical media in games. Right, next up, you know, we made a lot of gaming features over the years, but this one was something really special. It wasn't just us sitting on a sofa playing a game or me ignoring Susie.
Yeah.
This was phenomenal. We asked ourselves a question, what would it feel like to actually be on a battlefield? And we used some incredible technology and some amazing people to actually kind of do that.
Yeah, it was absolutely incredible and bonkers, but in the best way.
Check this out.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you nervous?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very excited.
Adrenaline?
And loads of adrenaline surging through my body right now.
Okay, good luck.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Now come with me to my control center. This is what I'm going to be seeing, these three monitors. So right here, we've got real live feed of Jason. And then here, I've got the game, which obviously he's going to completely influence.
After the camera had detected my body's outline, I was free to pick up my wireless gun and begin the mission.
Here we go.
As I took my first steps on the treadmill, the sensation of physically navigating myself through the level was mind-blowing. It felt like I was actually in the game.
That is insanely realistic.
This is so good.
But then the enemy spotted me. Suddenly, I was thrust into conflict, triggering the paintball guns to fire.
Oh, right past my ear. Ow!
Oh, he's been shot.
Jesus, this is so scary.
But as I spun round to retaliate, I noticed a problem.
I just can't get it to go down.
What's going on?
The tracking on my gun was out and wasn't aiming where I wanted, leaving me a sitting duck.
Ah, you...
I had no option but to pull Jason out of the firing line.
Ow!
Stop! Stop! Stop!
Hi.
Hi.
So that is, without a shadow of a doubt, the most realistic game I've ever experienced. That includes million-pound flight simulators. But my tracking's letting me down just a little bit, and it makes you so angry.
Wow, Susie, what... I mean, can I just say, I don't know if I've ever said this to you. Like, thank you so much, because you put mad amounts of work into that. Not to mention, of course, the people that you liaised with, these incredible people. I know by a long way it was the most expensive single item we ever did on the TV show. And we were only able to do it because the show, thanks to our lovely viewers, had become so successful that we could get funding to make this mad thing. I mean, it cost hundreds of thousands from memory.
Yeah.
But it was absolutely amazing. And I think, I wonder why it's the thing, that and the gadget show competition is the thing that most people ask me about when they see me on the street. And watching that back makes me understand why, because clearly you can see by my reaction that I was mind blown by it.
I remember all the gaming chat rooms and everything just had a massive meltdown, wanting to be you in there. But just the whole thing that was created and how incredible it was and how, you know, like you said, you couldn't just keep doing things like that because it cost so much money and we had so much help to do it. But I did notice that I didn't call it down. I didn't kind of shut it down very quickly. I think I must have been enjoying you being shot by the
people. That did occur to me that maybe it was built in, yeah? Maybe you coded it for that result. But in reality, so obviously paintballs do hurt. And you could see I was wearing quite baggy clothing. But if anyone's ever played paintball, it is quite painful. You do get quite big sore welts.
I mean,
as
we've both been welted a lot in the gadget show.
Yeah, over the years.
I have to put my hands up and say, I'm sorry I didn't shut it down sooner.
No, I would have done the same, Suze.
I know you would.
Funny. But most remarkable, I seem to remember as well that we got Andy McNab from Bravo 2-0. That was another like life moment where I'd read that incredible book, and to actually meet the man himself was amazing. So, we also got the SAS, and they gave it their stamp of approval, which you can't argue with, can you, Sue? So well done. Incredible.
You wouldn't argue with anyone in the SAS, would you? Looking back now, it kind of feels, doesn't it, like a glimpse into where gaming was heading, actually. You know, long before VR headsets became mainstream like they are now, we were experimenting with complete immersion and to a large degree of success, I think, from your reaction in that. And that really is why it's still one of my favourite gadget show films. It wasn't just about reviewing Battlefield 3. It was about pushing technology as far as we possibly could to create that unforgettable, and here's the word again, experience, physical experience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And finally, we've dug out a feature from E3 2013, where the gaming world got its first proper hands-on look at the PlayStation 4, the Xbox One. Now, Jason, this wasn't actually you covering the event. Instead, you remember this? You sent two gaming YouTubers over to Los Angeles to report back for the Gadget Show. Their names?
Ali A and KSI, by any chance?
Yeah, yeah. Back then, they were both building audiences on YouTube through their gaming videos. Fast forward to today, and of course, they're two of the biggest content creators in the world. Looking back now, it's amazing because we weren't just capturing the arrival of brand new console generation. We were also seeing the early days of two creators who would go on to become global superstars. So let's head back to E3. This is in 2013.
To get a gamer's perspective on the Xbox One and PS4, we enlisted the help of gaming internet superstars KSI and Ali A. With over 800 million views on their YouTube channels, these guys have become a phenomenon in the gaming world and were first in line to check out the new consoles.
So I'm really excited about the new Xbox One console because of the new graphical power that it can offer and the new Kinect system, which will allow you to be fully integrated into the game.
Priced at a hefty £429, manufacturers describe the new Xbox as an all-in-one system for games, live television, films and music. The big development, however, is that it's been designed to utilise the processing power within the cloud for many of its games, like the racing heavyweight Forza 5.
And as you can see, it looks absolutely amazing on the new Xbox One console. And alongside the redesigned and newly launched Xbox One console is a new controller. And actually inside each of the trigger buttons, which I'm using at the moment to accelerate and brake with, are individual rumble pads. And these respond to the type of surfaces you're on, whether or not you're braking hard or accelerating.
Originally, Microsoft announced that the Xbox One would only work when connected online, and there would be restrictions on playing second-hand games. But due to such a high volume of negative feedback, they've reversed this decision, although being online is still going to be a key offering to the wider gaming experience on the Xbox One. Just like the Xbox One, the PS4 comes with next-generation processing power.
It's good. Graphics are insane. This landscape, it looks really slick. You can definitely tell it's a next-gen console.
The console also comes with a bespoke controller, the DualShock 4, with a touchpad on top to interact with certain elements within your game. But after having spent a huge amount of time on each of the new consoles, neither Ali A or KSI could decide on a favourite.
Oh, that was amazing. I'll tell you something really interesting that I know about Ali A. The first car he bought when he became really successful was the one that both of them were driving in those two games, the Audi R8.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that's when I realised that these young people were maybe something to watch, because the sort of money that they were making, even back then, was starting to become serious. Little did we know that KSI would become a multi-millionaire with a lifestyle to rival Hollywood stars. Anyway, interestingly, the conversation around the Xbox One was hot right then. Microsoft did suffer quite a backlash, you know. So gaming companies were already trying to push us towards a kind of always online future or experience, which now feels so normal. But then it wasn't an easy fit with gamers. You know, that they were already pushing this idea of restrictions on secondhand physical games. So this was the start of the shift that has led to our news headlines in the last couple of episodes of this podcast, you know, because gamers just weren't happy with that idea. And to they pulled back, which is maybe why we should all get behind the petition that we were talking about at the start of this episode.
Well,
they do listen.
They did perform a U-turn back then.
They did. I'm not imagining it, am I? They did, yeah.
They scrapped the always online requirement and dropped the restrictions on trading and lending physical games before the console had even launched. So they did listen and they did react. Fast forward to today, we're having the same conversation all over again, aren't we, really?
Yeah.
Well, Jace, hopefully history will repeat itself, because if there's one thing that we've learned, it's that when gamers do come together and make enough noise, then the companies, you know, do listen. So if preserving physical games matters to you, do sign the petition in the link in the description, because together maybe we can make history repeat itself one more time.
And if not from Sony, then maybe one of the other games companies will look at this petition and other talk in the press and around the world and say, you know what, maybe we could do something with physical games. There's always a reason to sign the petition, so do what Susie says. I've found over the years it's always best to do what she says.
Happy wife, happy life, even if it's your TV wife. Exactly. That's all we've got time for on this week's podcast. I don't know what I'm talking about.
That's funny.
We hope that you've enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed it, although sometimes looking back isn't the best thing to make yourself feel very good. Anyway.
You are still the number one cougar of Cougarhampton. And
I'm so delighted. Thank you so much.
We hope you've enjoyed that little trip through the Gadget Show archives. Looking back, it's incredible. You know, that one of the biggest gaming debates of the moment actually has its roots right back then with the launch of the Xbox One. I'd actually forgotten that.
If you've got memories of queuing up for a console launch, buying your favourite games on a disc, or you've got thoughts on where gaming is heading, we would love really to hear from you. So please leave your comments below.
Yeah, huge thank you as always to our Patreon supporters. If you're watching on YouTube, you'll see your names on the screen right now. We love you. Your support has helped us restore more of the Gadget Show archive, make obviously more episodes of this podcast, and create brand new videos every single week. So thank you. It's hugely appreciated.
Yeah, thanks. And if you'd like to join them, you'll get ad-free episodes, early access to new shows, exclusive bonus content, access to the community, the complete Gadget Show archive. And you'll automatically, of course, be entered into our £5,000 CEX shopping spree giveaway.
Hell yeah. You can find out everything you need to know at patreon.com/thegadgetshow.
We'll be back next time with more gadgets, more technology, and plenty more, of course, to get excited about.
See ya.
Bye.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.